A couple years ago, a freelance online marketing company named Fiverr came out with an ad campaign called In Doers We Trust. And here's one of the images that kind of went viral and made a big deal, and it shows this kind of roughed up looking woman, and it says, you eat coffee for lunch, you follow through on your follow through, sleep deprivation is your drug of choice, you might be a doer. So of course they're trying to be clever, and unfortunately it hit a wrong note and people went nuts about it. It went viral and people were complaining and took a lot of slack on the internet and the press. Because the main point of the ad campaign is like, look, if you're a doer and you're running yourself ragged, then there's something awesome about you, right? Like, if you are depriving yourself of sleep and living off of campaign, like, that's the awesome, attainable goal that we should all work to. And people responded with things like, you know, working hard is awesome, but so is self-care. They said, who is this bleak, miserable life that you're pitching meant to appeal to? Because it's trying to speak to this over-glorification of, like, hustle and work hard and the strain that it puts on our lives. Like, somehow if we could just work harder and we could do more and life will come together and we'd be happy and life will somehow be better. But instead, which is what makes us grouchy when we see an ad like this, is like, do you know what that woman looks? She looks tired. She looks exhausted, like she needs a day off and a little bit of a nap, right? She doesn't need more caffeine. What she needs is a break. And we feel ourselves overworked and overtired and run down because of it. And in our overtiredness and our overworkedness, we find ourselves with more stress and more stress and less margin and space to deal with all of the things happening around us. I read this incredible definition of stress this week. It said, stress is the perception that the situations we are facing are greater than the resources we have to deal with them. Resources such as time, energy, ability, and help from others. What happens is we go, 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 and we do, and we do, and we do, and we find ourselves overwhelmed by all the things that have to get done, right? Christmas is a great example. There are about a bajillion things that have to get done, about a bajillion places to be, and it's go, 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 go. And we find that we don't have the resources, the time, the energy, the ability to do all of the things that have to get done. And we find ourselves tired and exhausted and worn thin from this constant do and go. And then we're taking less break and less vacations and we're sleeping less and resting less. And what we're finding is it has a significant impact on our health and our productivity and our well-being. We're doing more, resting less, sleeping less, and the overall impact isn't I'm going to deprive myself of sleep so I can do more. We're not. We're exhausting ourselves. We're wearing ourselves down in the race and the spin and the cycle of go, go, go. And listen to what some of these statistics say. It said sleeping too little can have harmful effects such as increased anxiety, irritability, or apathy due to a lack of energy, even some potentially dangerous ones such as reduced reflexes. But in the opposite hand, sleeping well will increase your energy, improve your attitude, and increase your ability to concentrate and react both physically and mentally. Said getting enough rest is key for cementing what you've learned during the day. But if you're sleep deprived, you have a higher chance of having a poorer working memory compared to people who get an ideal amount of sleep. Listen to how interesting this is. Said even if you are moderately sleep deprived, you'll have a 50% slower response time and a lower accuracy rate on simple tasks than someone who is under the influence of alcohol. They're actually doing these studied comparisons right now on sleep deprivation and how your body responds to it, just like if you had been drinking and what alcohol does and how it slows your reflexes. And they actually said driving sleep deprived is like driving over the legal limit of alcohol, because your body responds in the same slow, influenced way. What happens is our bodies need rest because in these rest periods, we are able to reduce our stress and improve our overall health. The wear and tear that life puts on our bodies, we recover doing rest period and sleeping. But what happens is we have so much to do that we're like, I'll just stay up a little bit later to get all the extra stuff that I have to get done. And we end up burning the candle at both ends. And we deprive ourselves of the rest, the time off, the breaks, the vacations that we need. And we just keep doing more and more and more And we stop taking care of ourselves in the process. And the more we do, the more overworked we feel, the more tired we feel, the more stressed we feel. And we go so much that we completely miss out on how important rest is for our well-being. Not just our physical well-being, but our spiritual well-being as well. Listen to what Jesus said. This is how important it is. He said in Matthew chapter 11, verse 28, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Christ actually invites us. He said, look, here's how much you need rest. I'm inviting you to come and find rest in me. What happens is we get so busy going, going, going that I don't know if you've ever been here before. Do you ever, like, you're counting down the days until, like, the end of the workday or the weekend or vacation, and you're like, if I could just get to here, I'm finally going to be able to rest and relax. I'm going to take a nap. I'm going to sleep. I'm going to catch up on all my shows. And we do all of these things that we think would rest us up, and then we go back to work more tired than we were before, right? Like, you need the vacation after the vacation because we think that we're going to find rest, and if we could just stop doing and we could sleep or we could watch shows or we could veg out with a good book or a game, right? None of those are bad things. But what happens is we think that what we need to rest is going to help us feel rested, but instead we feel just as drained as we were before. And so we take the time off and we take just as tired or overworked as we were with us back into the life that we were already doing. And what Christ said is, I want to invite you to experience a different kind of rest, where you actually feel refreshed in your soul and you don't feel drained, but you feel like you have the energy and strength that you need to show up for life once again. And then here's who said, Christ says he invites. He says, all who labor and are heavy laden, this is your invitation to come and find rest. Now, it's interesting because it gives us two kind of ideas here with labor and heavy laden, and he does it on purpose. The first one is those who labor, and I kind of like this idea because it means to kind of grow weary and tired and exhausted, and life kind of has a way of doing this to us and building up over time. I'm a mom, so I see the word labor real intentionally, right? Like, there's a reason childbirth is called labor, because you work to bring children into the world, right? You labor to do it. But here's what's interesting about labor. I remember getting ready to have kids, and I'm like, I can do anything for 24 hours. Like, that was how I was, like, psyching myself up to get there, right? Because you hear about the stories about people who are in labor for 24 hours, 48 hours, all of the things. I'm like, I can do anything. I can psych myself to do anything hard for 24 hours. And, you know, like, the first hour of labor, you're like, I'm in, I'm good, I'm great. The second hour, but let's be honest, the 10th hour of labor does not feel the same as the first hour of labor, right? Hour 24 is dramatically different than hour one because it's cumulative and it builds up and it builds up and it builds up, and you don't have the same energy that you had at the beginning, and you're more exhausted and worn down, and it progressively builds until you are depleted, have nothing left, and you're like, dear Jesus, if you want this child to come into the world, it's on you now, right? Like, it builds up and wears you down. But life does exactly the same thing. We can do anything hard for a short period of time, right? Like, we can tough it out. We can pull up our big kid pants and, like, get in there and do the hard thing. But doing something hard feels dramatically different for 5 years than it does the first day that you did it. And life builds up and it accumulates. And what happens is, doing it again and again, it builds up and it adds up and it wears you down a little bit more and a little bit more, until suddenly you have way less patience for the little things that used to be no big deal, right? You're way less able to roll with the punches than you used to be. If things don't go according to plan, life is miserable and it's over and you're stressed out and you're frantic about it. And you get more worn down and more tired and more stressed out. Christ knows that about us. He knows that life has an ability to wear us down. And he says, look, all of you who've been laboring and life's been building up and just chipping away at your well-being a little bit more and a little bit more, feeling depleted and exhausted, he said, you are invited to come spend time with me, because when you do, you will find rest for your souls. But he also extends the invitation to those who are heavy laden. And so where labor means to like get exhausted and worn down, heavy laden is used to describe somebody who's got a big burden placed upon them. Now, have you ever had to carry something heavy before? Again, right? Like you can carry something heavy for like a small period of time, but like mile 10, you're like, okay, my arms are shaking and I can't carry this anymore. The heavy burden weighs you down and it's somebody loaded up with a lot to carry. Now, here's a really interesting context that I don't want us to miss. When Christ originally spoke these words, he did it into a context, a culture of people that grew up practicing the law. You can read in the Old Testament the law that God handed down to Moses, and it marked the Israelite people. They were God's people. He was their God. It was going to set them apart from the other nations because how they followed God, the statutes, the laws that they followed. But over the years, what happened is the people who led the laws added all of these traditions into them. And so it wasn't just the law that you practiced, but then it was the traditions that were added to the law. And it became so heavy and burdensome, all of a sudden, nobody could hold it up. They couldn't keep the rules. They couldn't keep the requirements. And the burden of the law was so heavy, but everybody was falling short. It became so complicated that it missed out on what its purpose was always to be, building a relationship between us and God. I mean, they got it so complicated that when Jesus and his disciples showed up, they scolded Christ because they didn't think he was keeping the law the way the law was supposed to be kept. He's God. He created the law, but religion had made it so hard and burdensome and complicated that even Christ, they didn't think, was living up to the letter of what the law was supposed to be. Look, if Christ can't keep the law, we have no hope of ever keeping it. But Christ extends this invitation to those who feel overburdened by the law. The law was only ever supposed to point people to Christ, not set up this unattainable expectation that nobody could see out. The law only ever existed to show us our need for Christ. There are so many rules, we can't keep them all. We need Christ to help us. But instead, it got so complicated that it got completely missed the relationship between people and God. Now, it's easy to look through the lens of history and see how people did that in the time of Christ. It's much harder to take that lens and look at our life and say, how do we do that today? How do we make religion so complicated and the tradition so burdensome that it's harder than Christ ever intended it to be? And this invitation is the same one that Christ extends to us today. Those who feel burdened by religion, the burden of do this and don't do that, and you're a good girl if you do this and a bad boy if you do that, the burden of behavioral expectations, that we can lay down the impossible heavy load and we can find rest in Jesus Christ. Christ says, I invite you, when you feel worn down by life, to come connect with me and find rest. I invite you, when you feel overburdened by all the expectations of religion and the burdens of what to do and what not to do and falling short, to come connect to Christ and find a different way. And he says, let me show you how to exchange that heavy load, how to exchange that laboring view of life for something much better. It says in verse 29, take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Christ says, first, I'm inviting you to come find rest, not the kind that leaves you just as exhausted when you go back to work, but the kind that renews something in you to go back refreshed and energized. But then I'm also saying you can exchange the burden that's been weighing you down and pick up a different load to carry that feels incredibly different. And he uses this imagery of a yoke for us to help kind of understand this idea. I'm not a farmer. I've seen the pictures. You've seen the pictures. So we're going to roll with the analogy that God gives us. But I really want us to take to heart what Christ is saying when he gives us the image. A yoke is a wooden bar, and you put two animals in it. Maybe it's cattle. And what happens is the yoke helps them pull together so they can do a heavier job. They can work together and get a heavier, bigger load done. They can pull a heavier load together because they're working together in unison by this yoke that connects them. And what Christ is saying is, whether we acknowledge it or not, we've chosen a yoke that we've attached ourselves to. And what happens is, there is a yoke that we connect ourselves, that we carry, that leaves us feeling overworked, overstressed, worn out, and tired. We've attached ourselves to life in the kind of way that we've been carrying it all on our own, trying to do this heavy lifting and trying to carry more and more and more, and it leaves us feeling heavy laden and exhausted. But Christ says we can exchange that yoke and pick up another one instead. We can connect ourselves to him, and the exchange is, when we connect ourselves to Christ, we're pulling with somebody who's pulling with us, not against us. We're pulling with someone who's got our back and is working with us to do life in the best way that we possibly can. We won't feel worn down. We won't feel exhausted. We won't feel checked out. Instead, we're going to find rest for our souls because Christ is pulling with us, and the burden becomes so much lighter because Christ is holding up his end. Now, oftentimes, it's hard to follow through on this analogy because we hesitate to really follow Christ or really connect our life to him, because what we think is, it's going to be too hard. It's going to be too heavy to carry, or we're going to have to give up too much or do things that we don't want to do, and life's going to be more difficult, and Christ is going to ask too much of us. But Christ says the exact opposite of that is true. Not that following Christ is going to make life all of a sudden easy. Not that we're not going to ever experience hardship or pain or struggle or stress or loss. But that when we connect to Christ, what we find is our load lifted and refreshment for our souls. What it is that weighs us down is trying to do it without Christ. What it is that burdens us and leaves us feeling overwhelmed is trying to do it without him. And Christ says, when we connect to him, we actually find rest from all that heavy lifting that we've been trying to do on our own. But it's not the kind of rest that's just like we check out for a minute and then we try to jump back in. It's the kind of rest that actually allows us to lay down the heaviness, to lay down the burdens and the loads. Our shaking, tired arms get to put down the heavy burden at the feet of Christ and recover enough to gain our strength. We get to rest in him in the kind of way that refreshes our souls and gives our tired, weary souls a break from the burden and the loads of life, so that when we are connected to him, we get to refresh and repair our souls. We know our bodies need rest. We feel it when we've overdone it. We feel it when we're overtired. We feel it when we've done too much. But we ignore our souls send us the exact signals. They're yelling at us to slow down. They're screaming at us to give up the hectic pace because they're worn paper thin and can't do much more. Just as our physical selves need moments to rest and refresh, our spiritual sides need it as well. To put down our heavy loads and take a breath from the burdens that we carry. To find a place where we can just breathe in and breathe out and find the strength and the energy that we need to keep going forward. And Christ says we find this when we connect ourselves to him. Just as our bodies need sleep to re-energize and renew ourselves, our souls need Christ to re-energize and strengthen us to do what life has prepared for us next. But because life is so hectic and so paced and go, 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 we miss all of the things that God wants to do in us when we just simply pause and rest in him. and to really be able to keep my life and my stress and my thoughts in a proper perspective, we have to look at them through the right framework. Life isn't about what happens to us. It's about how we respond to what happens to us. Life isn't the things that are going on around us. Life is how we process and think about the things that are going around us. And if we aren't careful, if we never step back from the constant tug and pull of everything going on, we never have time to process and think about the things that we're going through. It's hard to bring our best self to the table when we are exhausted. It's hard to be the best version of who we want to be when we're so worn thin. We're trying hard not to snap at everything because we've got no reserve left in us to roll through what we're happening. And the idea of rest that Christ is reminding us of here, it's not something new. In fact, it's always been part of God's plan for how we as humans connect to Him. You can go back to the very beginning when God created everything, and He created all of existence and all of eternity and all of time and all of the things around us. And then He took a day off and He rested and He said, you know what? You should too. And He said, it's the Sabbath and it's holy, and I want you to find time every single week to take a day off and rest. To stop thinking about all of the day-to-day activities and the worry and the exhaustion and the demands on our time and just rest. If God could do everything and take a day off, why shouldn't we? He always made that part of the plan for how our routine of life should work, that we could take a day off and trust God to keep everything going, that the world's existence doesn't depend on us doing more and more and more, but in fact, we are better off for taking a day off and saying, you know what, God? I hear you're pretty good at holding things together. You've kind of always done it. And for a day, I'm going to trust you to keep things going and take myself out of the race. God said it is good for our well-being. It's good for our souls to take a rest so that we can trust Him to do what He's always done. Let me give you a really good image of this. In music, it's called a rest note. And what happens is a rest note is an interval between different pieces of music, and it's an interval of silence. And what happens is it creates a deliberate pause, a break in the action, so that the music doesn't just string together, but you get to really appreciate the big notes happening around it. We do the same thing in communication, right? We have commas and periods and breaks, paragraphs, so that we can pause from one idea to the next and appreciate what happened before and what's coming next, right? It's why we appreciate people who don't talk end on end on end on end and pause for a second in between so that we can appreciate what they're saying. I try, I promise. I just have a lot of things to say, and pausing is really hard for me. All right. But what happens is these pauses matter because it gives you a break from the music, from the idea, from the concept, from the words. And instead of them just all stringing together, you get to appreciate one to the next. Well, the same thing is true with life. We need spaces for rest. Otherwise, we just do one thing after the next, after the next, after the next, and we never take time to pause and think about the life that we're living. We never take time to just think and process our way through what's going on. And the point of a Sabbath, a day off, was always meant to be finding rest and connecting to Christ. It's always been more than going to church once a week or following the rules, but about seeking Christ and resetting our minds on our ultimate goals, our ultimate vision for what's going on, rather than just our temporary struggles and problems. It's a pause in our life that keeps us from just jumping from one thing to the next. Abraham Heschel said it in a really incredible way. He said, 6 days a week, we wrestle with the world, wringing profit from the earth. On the Sabbath, we especially care for the seed of eternity planted in the soul. The world has our hands, but our souls belong to someone else. Listen to what he says so beautifully and wonderfully. If we aren't careful, we will spend our entire life focusing on the work of our hands. We will spend our entire life jumping from one task and one urgency and one noise and one problem and one chaos to the next, to the next, to the next. And we will easily forget the seed of eternity that God planted within our souls. We will easily miss that God created us not just for this life, but for an eternity to come. And we'll miss this full potential that God has given us to grow into. That God gave us these lives to prepare our souls for an eternity with Him. If we allow it, what happens is the worries and struggles of the world and what's happening right now will rob the life of Jesus Christ right out of us. And we will forget we were created for more than just this life, and our future is more than just what we experience right now. We were created for an eternal purpose. Our souls long for eternity. God planted the desire within each and every one of us. And if we aren't careful, we'll make our days so full and so busy that we will forget this life is developing within us a soul and character traits and values that prepare us for an incredible eternity with God. When all is said and done, I can't take my job with me. All the recognition in the world doesn't come with me into eternity. I can't take my home, I can't take my bank account, I can't take any social media influence that we've accumulated. We can't take any of the things that we've accumulated over a lifetime. All we take with us is the soul that God has given us a lifetime to work on and develop. The truth is, when we really take time to pause in our life, we get to reflect on the idea that the challenges we face right now, the hardships, the struggles, the stress, the overwhelmingness, the tiredness, we learn to work our way through them. We weren't meant to be defeated by them. We weren't meant to be ruined by it. God isn't punishing us by having us go through hard moments in life. In fact, just the opposite is true. God wants to cultivate within each and every one of us values and characters and strength of soul that we don't find any other way than digging down deep, gritting it out, and trusting in Him to see us through the hardest times of life. We don't grow resilient souls through an easy life. We don't develop a fierceness of faith living in our comfort zone where nothing bad ever happens. Instead, what we find is in the harshest realities of life that we face, Christ can meet us there and develop and restore our soul and energize us and give us the strength we need to go back at life one more time, not crushed, not destroyed, but being a champion for Him. That was always the point of the Sabbath, to allow us time to rest, to allow our souls to press pause on life, and rather than being problem focused, looking for the growth opportunities with God. It enables us to just turn from the day-to-day struggle to saying, how is God at work in this all? Yes, this is hard. Yes, this is overwhelming. Yes, this is way more than I was prepared for. But God is still at work. God's still doing something. How do I press pause on the chaos and the loud and the noise and the urgency of life and just take a step away to connect with Christ and see what God might be doing in it all? Look, it's hard to make good life choices when we're running on empty. It's hard to respond well to life when our reserves are depleted and we've got nothing left to give. But instead, Christ says, let me invite you to a different way of doing life. Let me show you how to exchange out one burden and connect yourself to me so that you can look at life differently and see it all in a different way. And look at the promise He gives us. Look at verse 30. It said, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. This is a powerful promise that we cannot ever forget Christ makes to us. Following Christ does not burden us. It does not weigh us down. Instead, we find the loads of life lifted because Christ stands in the gaps with us and helps carry all that we've got going on. Christ promises us that when we connect to Him, we get to seek Him out differently, and His load isn't heavy or burdensome. Instead, He meets us and helps us carry the loads different so that we can do life better. But here's the truth. If we're really going to learn from Christ, if we're really going to connect ourselves to Him so that He's doing life with us and we're committed to following Him, we have to seek Him. We have to spend time with Him. God's not just going to accidentally show up in my life in moments. God's going to show up where I've connected myself to Him, and He's going to speak through the moments where I'm spending time with Him. My schedule's not just going to suddenly clear up and I'm going to like accidentally find time with God. We have to be real intentional and say, this matters. This is a priority and it has to come first, because when it does, everything else feels incredibly different. If I'm going to want to connect to Christ and find rest in Him, then I have to have places in my life where I'm near Him, where I'm close enough to Him that He can show up and direct me and show up in me. Part of our commitment to following Christ is thinking Christ-like things. It's trying to live in Christ-like ways and switching our thinking from just who I am and what I want to saying, what does Christ want for me? Who did Christ create me to be? And if we want to spend this time with Christ, then we have to say, what am I doing anywhere with my time that refreshes the life of Christ in me? I'm really good at wasting time. I am expert level at finding ways for my time to just go really fast and have nothing to show for it afterwards, right? We're good at it. But what's more important isn't just checking out and letting time get away from us. It's instead saying, where do I have time in my life scheduled to think about the things of Christ? To connect myself to Him in the kind of way that I'm thinking more than just what I want from minute to minute, but what Christ wants for me instead. I'm going to give us a couple ways to do this. It's not complicated, but it is so valuable when we make it a priority and it comes first. Here's the first idea. This is what it looks like. Reading our Bible. God gave us this incredible tool to find Him. He didn't get far off and say, you have to work really hard to find me and you have to work really hard to dig and understand. He said, look, here I am. Here's what I've been doing for all of this time, and here's what's been happening since creation, and here's how the church started. And God reveals Himself throughout history, from creation to the New Testament church and all of the things that happened in between. The Bible is an incredible place to meet God and hear His voice. The Bible is an incredible place to read about the lives of men and women who said yes to following Jesus Christ. Do you know what's incredible? The more time you spend reading the Bible, the more time you read about these saints and these incredible people that we've put up on these high pedestals and said, wow, look at what God did. What we learn is they were human people just like you and me. They weren't these incredible, impeccable saints, and God said, you know what? You need to be on my team. They were struggling with life just like we struggle with life. And God showed up and said, hey, let's go here. And they said yes. And their lives were remarkably different because they did. And God did incredible things through men and women through the Old Testament and the New Testament. It wasn't easy. They faced hardship and struggle, and they faced all kinds of things that we might not ever experience in our lifetime. But what we can do, just like they did, is say yes to following God. We can take one more step of faith with Him and see what He might do in our lifetime. We get to pick up the Bible and see what God has been doing. We get to hear the voice of Christ challenge us about what we got to let go of to follow Him. It's not easy, but man, is it healthy for our souls to spend time with Christ and let Him chip away at our own struggles and insecurities and selfishness and all of the things we've stored up in our life saying, I have to have this. And Christ is saying, really? Do you? Because what would happen if you let go of this and created space for following me instead? And we get to spend time where Christ challenges us and He challenges our thinking and He challenges our desires and He challenges our hearts to go more in with following Him. The Bible is where we go to meet God. And it's where we get to hear what He's been doing. And we get to hear the awesome life of Christ and how He showed up and He fed the hungry and He healed the sick and He taught this rough ragamuffin group of people how to live for God and how the church started. And it's an incredible insight. And God uses these words to speak to us. God uses these ideas to call us to holy and noble aspirations. He uses these words to teach us something about Him that we never knew before. And it's in the knowing Him that our faith grows and our courage grows and our strength grows and our resilience grows. My dad is teaching an awesome sermon series called The Core at Columbia Station. And he does a really good job of giving you big ideas. The Bible's big. It's a lot of books in one space, and sometimes it can be overwhelming. So if you want a good starting place, I'd encourage you to go listen to him. You can do it on our app, our website. You can watch the videos or listen. He does a really good job outlining the Bible and the main ideas that help us connect to God. So the first thing it looks like is reading the Bible. The second thing it looks like is prayer. Prayer is where we communicate with God. We talk to God, but we also listen. It's where we connect to God and we ask for help, and it's where we devote ourselves to saying, God, I want to hear you. I want to see you. I want to follow you. Show me the way. We don't pray because we have the expectation that we are going to change God's heart, but we have the expectation that God is going to change ours. And in this time that we spend with Him, He's at work doing something, and we're seeking Him in that place. But here's the truth about prayer. The very best way to learn how to pray is to pray. I know it can feel very intimidated. We've heard Billy Graham pray down the gospel, and we've heard incredible people say incredible prayers, and we're like, well, I could never pray like that. God didn't ask you to. God asked you to share your heart and your words with Him. And He gave us some really good directions and some really good ideas on how to do it. But it starts with us talking to God. Not because we have the memorized prayer down and not because we have the right order of how to say things, but because we share ourselves with God and we hope to find Him there to meet with us. You learn how to pray by praying. No matter how awkward it feels, or if you feel like you can't pray like them, that's okay. God doesn't ask you to. He asks you to pray like you. And He asks you to bring you into it, no matter where you are. Strong or weak or new or experienced, whether it's daily or emergent, we learn to pray by praying. We learn to pray by praying with others. We learn to pray by reading about prayer. I mean, there's so many beautiful prayers that we get to read through the Bible. I mean, pick up the book of Psalms, and you've got a book of how David and others just pleaded with God and poured their hearts out to Him. And we get to see God at work through prayer. We get to see what God is going to do. And then here's the third idea I want us to try. It's called silence and solitude. We need moments that are quiet and away from everything else. The world is loud. Our lives are loud, and they're busy, and they're chaotic, and there's always some sound, and whether it's everything or everything is loud. And we need a moment to press pause and get away from it all. Not to do nothing, but to find in the silence and solitude ways to look for God. You know, God might be shouting at us, but we can't hear Him because our voice is so loud. There's no space to hear what He wants to say. And we need that pause, that silent moment, that away from everybody and everything else kind of moment where we can just know that God is God, where we can just look for Him and hear Him and see that He's in control. He's at work and He's got it. We need time away from the regular routines of life, the day-to-day go and the struggle and the stress, so that we can restore our souls in the presence of Him. But it also helps us to get a perspective on things. Instead of just flowing from one moment to the next and missing the beauty of right now, instead of just going from one chaotic moment to the next and missing out on this incredibly wonderful life that we have, we need these moments of quiet to reflect on it, to think about it, to fully appreciate what's happening all around us. We need the time to seek God. We need the time to be directed by God in the way that we should go. What looks like rest sometimes is just quiet time with Christ, away from the crazy chaos of life. Quiet time where we just get to be with Him, where we just get to press pause for a minute. Life's going to go on. It's going to keep happening. But we just get to press pause and look at our life and see things differently. And what we find when we do, it helps prepare us for life different. It helps prepare us for the day ahead rather than just reacting to it all as we go. If I really want to connect to Christ, then I really want to experience rest, then I have to make time to spend with Him. Then I have to say, this matters. It's a priority and it has to come first. It has to show up in my schedule, right? It's not just going to magically appear. My life is going to fill up whether I acknowledge it or not. Instead, I have to say, this matters. I'm putting it in first and everything else can fill up around it. So here's what I want to challenge us with. In this wonderful little in-between time that we have, this little space in between Christmas and the New Year, before everything jumps back to work and crazy and chaos and all of the things that have to get done, what if we made it a goal and said, there's two things that I really want to get right this year. I really want to schedule time to spend with Christ. And we sit down and we just look at our schedule. Before we fill it up for everything that has to happen next year, before our to-do lists get out of hand, we make it a goal to say, this is my week, and every single day I'm looking through and saying, here's where I'm spending time with Christ. And we write it down. We put it in our calendar. We put it in our schedule. We put it in our routine, and we say, this is my scheduled time with Christ. Nothing else gets to interrupt it. And in that time, we read our Bible, we pray, we find quiet. Pick one, pick two, and practice them in that time that we spend with Christ. But then here's the second thing. Schedule rest. I know we schedule all the appointments, we schedule all the work meetings, we schedule all of the things that have to get done and all of the places that we have to be, and we just kind of think rest is going to happen on its own in the in-between spaces. But it doesn't. Because life squeezes out all of that space with something else that has to get done. So what if instead we scheduled rest into our week? We made it a natural rhythm of our life and we said, this is where rest is going to show up in my life. This is the time I'm going to rest. And I'm going to be intentional about connecting with Christ in this time. I mean, what might happen if we just challenged ourselves to do those two things this year? I mean, what might God do in the margin and the space and the pause and the rest when we find intentional time to connect to Him? What might He do in us? What dreams might we start dreaming again? What visions for the future and hope for what could be could stir up in our heart because we see God different? We see life different because we've taken the time to pause and connect with Him. I read a beautiful book this week by Charles Mackesy, and it's called The Boy, the Mole, the Fox, and the Horse. And it tells the story of a boy who's lonely, and he meets a mole, and they stare into the beautiful wild together. I love, this is the author's description of the book. He said, the boy is full of questions. The mole is greedy for cake. The fox is mainly silent and weary because he's been hurt by life. The horse is the biggest thing they've ever encountered and also the gentlest. But here's one of my favorite lines from the book that I read. Asking for help isn't giving up, said the horse. It is refusing to give up. And I love this line. I've been kind of thinking about it all week, and here's what I love the most about it. Asking Jesus Christ for help is one of the best, biggest things any of us could ever do. It is in fact the very first step in refusing to give up on this beautiful, amazing, messy life that he is giving us to live. It is refusing to settle for anything less than the life that God has created us for. Christ is the biggest thing that we will ever encounter, but friends, he is also the gentlest. And when we say yes to connecting our lives to him, what we find is the kind of rest that restores us and energizes us and gives us the courage and the strength to step back into life and be the men and women he's created us to be. Dear Heavenly Father, I pray that you would help. I pray, Father, that you would meet us where we are today and show us the way to go. I pray, Father, that you would stir up within us a desire to find space and time to pause on life and rest with you. I pray, Father, that we would hear the invitation from Jesus Christ to come and follow him. I pray, Father, that you would give us the courage to exchange out one way of life for another, that we might find a new life in Jesus Christ. That in this newness of life, Father, we would feel the ease and the burden would be released from our souls. I pray, Father, that we would live in the promise that you've shown us that your way is gentle and easy. I pray, Father, that you would give us the courage to step up and face the demands of life, not ruined, not destroyed, but encouraged and strengthened because we've found the time to refresh our souls in you. Help us, I pray. I pray, Father, that we would not let this pass us by, but it would become an urgent priority that we have to see done, spending time with you, resting in Jesus Christ, and restoring our souls. Pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen.